Hey everyone, welcome back to A Life of KG. I have a little something for you guys. If you haven't yet downloaded my goal planner, then if you check the show notes, there is a link there so you can go and download your free planner. So you can go and plan your business, your personal life, your finances, like all of your goals, and it's completely free. So go and grab yours. Today on the show, I have Melody Mikhailski from Style Seek. I am so excited, all the way from America. We talk all things growth in business, investment, being a mum in business, how to grow your beauty business more. Literally, we covered everything. So I'm super excited to have her on. Without further ado, here she is. I would love to introduce you to Flawless Beauty Accounting, which is owned by Ariella, who specializes in providing exceptional accountancy and bookkeeping services tailored to the beauty, hair, and aesthetic industry. Her modern and personalized approach sets her aside from them traditional accountancy firms. Her mission is to help beauty business owners navigate through that crazy world of tax and business finances. Ariella has helped her clients save over £1 million since she established Flawless Beauty Accounting back in 2020. To contact Flawless Beauty Accounting, you can click on the links in the show notes, and Ariella is giving a huge 50% off your first month. Melody, welcome to The Life of KG. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to speak with you.
Oh, I'm super excited. I know this has been in the diary for a while. So can you give us an intro on who you are, what you do, where you're from, because you're not from the UK?
Yep. Absolutely. So my name is Melody Mikhailski. I run a company called Style Seat. I founded it back in 2011, and we're kind of like Treatwell, which you might be familiar with in the UK, for the United States. So similar to maybe Airbnb for finding a stylist, makeup artist, nail artist, barber. We're a destination for our clients to find professionals that work for them. And we're also a business school for professionals to run and grow their business. So we triple an entrepreneur's revenue in the first 2 years of being on the platform by really making their business run efficiently and then connecting them with new clients.
Wow. So it's a lot. It's more than just a booking system then.
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, what I really love about it is I knew I wanted to start a company. I had been in tech before. I definitely wasn't qualified to start a company, just to be very clear. but I just had this passion and idea for helping entrepreneurs in the beauty space, hairstylists, makeup artists, barbers, et cetera, be more financially successful. And what I found is that their financial success was limited by their knowledge of business and operations and marketing and margins and, you know, digital client acquisition, things that have nothing to do with how good they are at their craft. Their financial success should be limited by their technical skills, right? How amazing they are at what they do and maybe how much they want to work. And so for me, I wanted to create a digital platform to give them everything that they need so that, you know, we can maximize their earning potential. And so that's really what it is. So the consumer side of it is what people probably most know us for, is a place to go and find, you know, really amazing beauty professionals. But the majority of what we do is really to help those beauty professionals be successful.
So did you have a background in tech, but not business? Like, what was the deal with that?
Yeah, I was actually a French major and an international relations major. I didn't have an engineering degree. I didn't go to Harvard or Stanford or any of those types of universities. I did work at a handful of startups as a product manager, so working in product alongside software engineers. And I left my absolutely good paying job to go start this business I'd started doing nights and weekends, you know, starting this company. I'd leave work at, you know, really late at night, and then I'd go home and I'd keep building this company until like midnight or whatever. And then spending all my weekends working on it. And then finally I decided I'd just jump in and do it, which made no financial sense because I had a couple $1,000s saved in my bank account, mostly because I never took vacation. So my company had to pay me out when I left. And I had a lot of debt. I had a lot of school debt, for example, from university, and no income after I quit my job to start this company. So it didn't make any financial success, make any financial sense for me to do this, but I just had this conviction that I could make it work. And so I built the business. I was like on an extremely tight budget, just putting everything on credit cards, really determined to figure this out because I didn't have a backup plan. And did that for about a year and a half until we were finally like, we had to raise money. So I think I delayed that period of time because I was scared of raising money. I didn't think that I was smart enough to do it. It was a really intimidating process for me. And I had to go out there and just do it. And we raised a little bit of money, which helped us, you know, push the business further and grow the team a little bit. And it's really snowballed from there.
Because that's something I actually have never done in business. I've been in business now for 15 years, but I've never gained investment. And it's always been something that I'm like, huh, I'm not even going to try that. That is really scary. And I've also heard some horror stories, and then I've also heard some massive success stories. Like, what made you want to go and get investment? I mean, we're going completely off topic here because this isn't what we was going to talk about, but hey, what made you go and get investment, and how did you find that process? And did it literally, is that what helps you scale?
There's definitely pros and cons. I feel like there's this perception that you're a real company when you have investors, and that's fundamentally not true. It's a path that certain people take that may or may not make sense. Because when you get investors, now you're signing up for certain growth rates. You know, you're signing up for a path that may or may not be aligned with the path that you'd like to take individually or your happiness personally. Because if that path isn't successful, you have to spend that money that they give you in order to grow. And if maybe you weren't quite ready to accelerate growth, you still had to finalize some of the fundamentals of the business. Putting growth on top of poor fundamentals will lead to failure, right? So in that case, raising money will lead to the failure of your company, because you can't not spend the money, you can't sit on it and not deploy it. And so it's a path that makes sense for some businesses and not others. There's definitely pros and cons. Sometimes there's this philosophy of, or like there's this group of people that are really proud of how much they've raised, and they see that as how successful they are. And that's also fundamentally not true. There's a lot of companies that can raise a lot of money, but just don't have, they're not real businesses yet, right? Or raising a lot of money masks the fact that they're not real businesses. So if you can start and run your company, even if it's a slower path without investment, it's the strongest way that you can do it, because you have to think about fundamentals and revenue and your product, and you have to be thoughtful about absolutely everything you do because it's your lifeblood, right? So I know, not to get too off topic, but there's definitely pros and cons. When you're building software, you just can't typically afford the engineers to build the software if you don't raise investment. That's why it's a typical model in this industry. But I definitely don't push people to go raise investment. So many people reach out to me because I'm an early stage investor, and they'll say, help me raise money. And I'm always like, the best way to raise money is to have an amazing business without having raised money. And then everyone will throw money at you. And it's a frustrating thing to hear, but the point is like, don't worry about the financing, worry about the business. And, you know, then the money will come if you want it and if you believe that it's the right choice.
That's really interesting. Thanks for sharing all of that. So beauty industry, any background when it comes to the beauty industry, or is it just something you have a
No,
passion for?
You know, everyone asks if I was a stylist or makeup artist. I absolutely can't do my hair or makeup. So no, I wish that I could. I wish that I was creative. I think I was almost drawn to the industry because I was not good at it. It was such a mystery for me of like, how does someone color hair? What makes beautiful hair color versus not? When I started this company, colored my hair black from a box. I, as I mentioned, was not in a financially amazing place. So every haircut or color that I would get was so important to me. And I wanted to make sure that I was going to exactly the right person. And, because it's an expensive service, it's one of the most expensive things that people spend their money on. And so for me, I wanted to have really robust portfolios of stylists. I wanted to see photos of their work. I want to read reviews from clients that have been to them, positive and negative. I want to read reviews for the specific service that I'm looking for. I want to find the best stylist in my city for blonde balayage or, certain type of extensions or whatever it is that I was looking for. And this is why I started the company is because there just wasn't that information available. You could get information maybe on a salon and its general reputation from Yelp or some other, service like that. But that wasn't enough. Then when you get the appointment at the salon, you call the front desk and you say, who's your best person for this? And they're like, they don't care. They just send you to whoever, right? And I went and had a couple of services in a row that I wasn't happy with, and I felt frustrated as a consumer. And as I talked to more stylists, makeup artists, et cetera, I realized they're not using, there is no platform for them to really showcase their services and say, here's what I specialize in, and here's examples of that work, and here's my pricing, et cetera. So that was really, it was almost like my extreme lack of knowledge about the beauty industry is what prompted me to jump into it. But since then, I've fallen in love with everything pertaining to the industry. And I just find it to be such an interesting space. And beauty professionals are such giving, loving, creative, beautiful individuals. And so the fact that I get to spend my time helping them be more financially successful doing what they love is very, very fulfilling for me.
I bet you know loads about the industry now, anyway, from just being surrounded by all of us. And it is literally the best industry. Like, I love it.
Yes, it absolutely is. And there's this stereotype, I think, if you don't know much about the industry, that like beauty is superficial or frou-frou, whatever. But it's really about, and social media, TikTok especially has really helped to explain this. It's about self-expression. It's about taking joy in your daily rituals and in not just your appearance, but how you present yourself. It's about serving yourself a little bit, honoring yourself, playing, like finding joy in being human a little bit. And when you start to understand that, you realize how deep and important this industry is for people and their happiness. And I've especially loved this trend. 15 years ago, beauty standards were like the cover of Vogue magazine. And if you weren't that skinny white girl, you didn't fit. And now beauty standards are so much more encompassing of whoever you are, show up and let's have fun, and share with each other and like enjoy the process. And that to me has been the most interesting shift in this space and makes it a lot more joyful.
Yeah, it's definitely evolved over the years for sure, and evolving all of the time, especially with like the likes of TikTok and all of that. Like, it's definitely given us more of a platform. So you've helped beauty professionals across America make over 12 billion in revenue, which is like a crazy amount of money. How long did it take you to kind of grow this platform? Like, was there a point where you were like, oh my God, like, everyone's signing up, like, this is brilliant, it's working. Like, was there a kind of a pivotal point?
When I look back, yes, but growing a business, you're taking tiny steps. It feels like you're moving forward an inch every single day. There was no like, oh my gosh, like now we're so successful. I've never felt that moment ever. But when I look back, I say, oh yeah, we did those things. And then what a journey we've been through over time. I've been running my company for like 13 years. So it's been a while. And now we're huge. And now we have these huge numbers. But it's like this, it's like meditation. Like you just take these tiny little steps and tiny progress every day. And I remember when I first started the company, I would make these like assumptions, and looking back, it's so dumb. I'd be like, oh, well, when we get this many professionals or clients, then we'll be successful or it'll get easier. Oh, okay. Well, now when I hit, you know, this level of scale, that's when things will change. And actually, that's never the case. You never feel that way. With every new bit of growth comes complex and crazy challenges. And I don't think it's ever gotten easier from the beginning. It's just that my capacity for dealing with hard things has probably gotten better. And I say that because I think that's true in a lot of things. I hear from so many people, well, when I make six figures, then I'll be happy, or then I can relax, or then I can really think about, you know, self-care. And it's really true that you just have to do it along the way, and you have to understand that there's never going to be a destination where you're like, oh, okay, here I am. Now I can chill, right? It's like, actually, it is the journey. As cliche as that sounds, it's been my experience to be so true.
I'm glad you touched on that, because it was literally maybe 10 minutes before we jumped on this call. And I'm a business mentor as well to those in the beauty space. And one of my clients reached out and they had X amount of problems going on, and they're doing so, so well, but they didn't understand. They were like, when is this going to stop? And I was like, it's not going to. Like, the more successful you get, just comes different problems a lot of the time. Like, it doesn't mean that all the worries are going to go away, or you're still going to have the most amount of money every single month. Like, it doesn't work like that. It is a constant, that roller coaster, no matter how big you grow.
Yes. Well, here's another example of that, because that's so true. I was talking with Huda Khatun the other day, who just announced on Instagram that she's coming back to her company to be CEO and to take more control. And when you think about Huda, you're like, oh my gosh, she's created a, you know, more than a $1 billion brand. She's in every single Sephora. She's extremely wealthy. She must have it all. It's easy for her now. You know, life must be perfect. And what she shared recently is as she has scaled her business, she's given up more and more control, because she thought, to get to the next level of scale, because I've never done it before, let's bring in experts who are, you know, smarter than me. I can't remember what she said, but like, who have done this before, have this experience, because she, even at her scale, had low self-esteem or whatever might have been happening there. And this is something that is so common. This is such a common journey for people. You get to a certain scale and you're like, oh my gosh, we're doing, you know, I've reached the next level of success. I don't know if I'll be able to take it further. And so she gave up control, and the company didn't go in the direction that everyone had hoped. And she decided to reassert her control and to go back to her original vision and to become CEO again, and to have that belief in herself that she could bring the company to the place that she wanted it to be. And I thought that I was texting her. I thought that she came onto Instagram and she shared that. And I thought that was so important, because I said, not only is it important because it helps everyone at whatever level they are in their business or across this industry see that you're going through this, and it makes them feel better about their own journey, but you're also sharing it when you're still in it, right? She was sharing it from this really vulnerable place of, I am coming back to see if I can make this work. And I hope that I can, and I'm a little bit fearful, but I also have conviction in my vision. We'll see. Come on this journey with me. Versus, I think a lot of people only want to tell that story when they've already built the success, and so it's many years later, and so they can talk about the ups and downs because they've gotten through it. So I just thought that was especially vulnerable and really powerful and so important for us in the industry together, but also as women, to share those types of experiences, because if we don't, then everyone thinks that they're all the only one going through it. And in reality, we're all probably going through it, or have, or will. So I just thought that was really powerful.
Yeah, like I completely agree. It's so good to hear it from those that are top of their game, and you know, we can see that they're smashing it, but they also still have things that are happening in their business. I mean, I was talking to my coach this week and I was like, I mean, everyone sees like all the things I'm doing and all my fingers and all these pies and the business is doing really well and we're in this magazine and that magazine. But even in my coach, I was like, what am I doing wrong? This is happening, this is happening, this is happening. Like, yeah. It happens to literally like all of us. And it's,
yes,
everyone just needs to know that, like, complete roller coaster having a business.
Yes. And it's okay. And that's the journey. And there are ups and downs, and embrace it all, right? Like, it's okay if there are downs. Like, you can get excited about the ups and you can be disappointed in the downs. I made the mistake of never getting excited about the ups, but being really disappointed about the downs and beating myself up about it. And, you know, if you're going to believe the downs and feel bad about the downs, then you also have to be excited about the ups. So that's been a lesson that I've been trying to get better at. And to also just realize it's never going to change. It will always be that way. And as you grow and scale, your highs will get higher and your lows will get lower. And that's just the journey. So the more you can sort of be on board and accept it and take it with grace, which I still struggle with. I'm not sitting here as someone who's like excellent at this, but you know, the more you can sort of, there's a thing called the happiness advantage, which is people that are happier and have a happiness and abundance mindset statistically do better in life. And it is not because they are smarter or, you know, things have swung their way more often than not. It's because that happiness causes them to always see the good things and go towards the positive energy. And then when people interact with them, they want to work with them more because they're happier. They want to be around them. You're recruiting better people. You're closing more deals, right? And there's a correlation between the two. And I've always thought that to be very interesting and like very in line with when people talk about abundance mindset or what are the philosophies? There's all these like woo-woo philosophies about that. And I like, it's fun to hear the science back up what some of those, you know, what some of the people say.
I want to give a shout out to Sky Premium Life products. Now, you will know from last year that I was testing all of their supplements and I absolutely love them. They were a sponsor on this podcast last year and they also are this year. I have tried all of their supplements, from collagen to their hair tablets to they've got focus tablets, anything that you need help on with your body system functioning, whatever that is, they have help. And I just love them all. I would highly, highly recommend them. We also started selling it within our business, making extra money in the salon with retailing the products. And because they're extremely reasonably priced, clients are loving them. Lots of my clients were also using them and they're selling them in their businesses too. So if you want to grab a discount, you get 15% off their products. The link is in the show notes. If you want to sell it within your business, reach out and I'll tell you exactly how to do that. Or you can just message them directly. But I highly, highly recommend you take these for your own well-being. And I also recommend if you have a business that you're selling it within that too. Because it's so true. And I think you can only really... You know it's true and you're actually going through it day to day, right? So when you're having like a really good time and everything's flowing and you're getting these deals coming through or you're getting a fully booked diary or whatever that is, it's like ching, 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 ching. It all happens. You're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then when you have a bad day, like everything happens on this bad day. So for beauty professionals, for example, if you have a cancellation, oh God, I've had a cancellation. Next minute the phone goes, you've had another cancellation. All of a sudden you've had all these cancellations in one day. It's like, it's like just this effect where it is literally like the energy we give off.
Yes.
We attract. And I think lots of people do think that's really woo-woo. But like you said, there is science that backs this up. Like, it is so true.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. And, you know, there are things that we can control and things that we can't. And I try and attach my happiness to something happens outside of my control. You can choose to get really upset about it. Or you can say, all right, this thing happened. There's nothing I can do about that. There's nothing I can do about these cancellations. They are what they are. How can I spend the next X hours of my day today trying to get more appointments, trying to improve my business in some way? That is what I can control. Focusing on what I can control has helped to funnel my energies from like stress and worry and upsetness, which is not productive, to productivity, which can also, you know, help you be more successful.
How do you think you learn to grow in business? Like, were you putting heads in books? Like, what, how did you learn?
Oh my gosh. Just being thrown right into the fire. You know, there are some fantastic books out there. One of my favorites is The Hard Thing About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz. I think it's fantastic. It's like, it's dense, but it's good. He tells these stories of his journey in business, and he's now one of the most successful venture capitalists in the US and probably the world. But he talks about the ups and downs. And as you read it, you're like, oh my God, this is a shit show. Like, you know, as he's talking about his company and the mistakes that he's making are reasonable. You're like, oh my, you know, you really feel for him and see how he ended up in that place. And then you see the things that he did to get through it. And that to me, I think is just a great book. There's so many of them out there. I think it's a combination of definitely doing research around how to run a successful business, but so much of it is mindset. I think it's important to just understand how your business is operating. What are your success drivers? And just focus on that top 20%. Don't worry about all the other stuff. And just doing it. I mean, every day still I wake up and I do things that I've never done before. I feel like, you know, I've run this company for a while, but my job changes drastically every couple of months. The company is at a different stage. There's new things we need to think about. There's new challenges. There's new problems. There's new good things that happen. And so my job is to just be as on it as I possibly can, which means stretching in new and different ways all the time. So I think having your mental game strong, meditation, mindfulness, physical fitness, happiness, really spending time to invest in your own happiness. Those things to me are more important than certain business fundamentals or like reading business books, because that's how you build your resiliency and your mental reserves and your energy to keep being curious and being able to, you know, run and grow your business.
Before we come on, you mentioned about your little ones as well. You're a mommy as well as an entrepreneur. How do you find that balancing act?
I have a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old, and you know, it's interesting. I was not a kid person before I had kids. I had never probably held a baby before, but I had never changed a diaper and was, you know, I did not want to hold your baby if I saw it. I was not like enamored with children. I don't know. It's just different. And now that I have kids, they're the greatest thing on the planet. And I'm happy to hold whoever's baby. I'll change stranger's baby. If we're on an airplane and a child is screaming, I'm like, toss it over here. I will walk that child up and down the aisle for hours. I don't know. It changed me. And I think what it did was it gave me something really incredible outside of my company, which the greatest gift for me about that is that it really forced me to be as productive as possible in the hours that I'm working. Like, when I didn't have a life outside of my company, I could spend infinity hours doing everything. And I would just stay up until midnight every night, you know, working. But when you have to put your kids down every night, or when you want to go hang out with them and it's so joyful doing though, it's like, all right, well, we got to solve this problem now. Like, we got to solve it in the next 20 minutes and have a plan so that I can go and do what I need to do over here. And I think that has just driven a lot of urgency and efficiency. And it's been really good for us in terms of, forcing me to think bigger all the time because I just don't have enough hours in the day.
I'm very, very similar because I have two little ones as well. And it really is like my work time is like my work time. Hash that out as much as I can, super productive. And then when it's my children's time, it's just my children's time, like no one disturb me. And then I'll literally make sure that like, we have our holidays, I'll have the school holidays off, all of that stuff. But then it means that I ram everything in to the days where I am working. And I literally think that's how I run my life. And that's definitely how it's helped me become more successful since having children. When lots of people think your growth stunts once you've had children, don't get me wrong, it's hard to do the juggle, right? It's really difficult. But having that set structure makes it so much better.
I completely agree, and I think that women and society have stretched in this way. Like, it used to be having it all was, doing incredible things at work and then coming home and then doing it all at home. And I think now we realize that's dumb and makes no sense. It's okay to have a messy house and happy kids and happy family. It's okay. Like I feel like standards have just changed to stretch to fit what actually matters in life. And that's so important. And our standards of success have changed. Like, I love my kids and I love hanging out with them. And I don't ever want them to see me stressed. Like the day can be stressful and something horrible can be happening at work. And I do a sigh out and just leave it in my office. I'm lucky enough to work from home, so my kids are my 2-year-old's around the house every day. My oldest one goes to school, but I get to see them during the day, which has been such a joy. From when I would go into the office, I saw my baby literally an hour a day, which was awful, and I was really sad when we did that. And the greatest gift of COVID for me is that I got to switch to working from home, and so I get to see my kids like sporadically throughout the day, which brings me a lot of joy. And it makes me want to be more productive at work and really turn off when I'm outside of the office. And I think that's actually way better than, the other way around. So, what is balance? How do you balance it all? I have no idea. It all blurs into one, but it's sort of happy chaos. And if I have to flex to work and see my kids a little less, I'll do that for periods of time. And if I have to do the opposite, I'll do that. And I don't know what balance looks like, but we're always tuning it, and it's happy chaos. I'm just always trying to figure it out.
Yeah, you sound like you're doing a pretty amazing job. Yeah,
Well, I'm trying, and it brings me a lot of joy. And like when you run a company, we all work really hard all the time. And I'll just say for myself, when I was in my 20s and early 30s, I thought, I had these ideas of like, well, as soon as this happens, then it will all get easy. And like, fast forward 5 or 10 years, and you're like, oh, I'm still feeling the way I felt. Maybe we're bigger and, things are different. But, and so that's made me realize like, the days are long, but the years are short. And I think I saw this on TikTok, which is so cheesy to say, but it went around. I'm sure everyone's seen it, like the meme that's like when people think back to the good old days, like imagine if you knew they were the good old days today. And I think about that all the time. Like my kids will never be 5 and 2 again, and they're so fun and it's so joyful, and so I want to be as present as possible with them because this is life. This is more important than work. And I love my work. It feeds me and fulfills me and brings me joy. It makes me a better mom. So it's like, how can I be so ambitious and work hard and push, but also enjoy my life and the things that I'll never get back, like part of our experience in this world? So I don't know. I don't know the answer, but I think that mindfulness of, like, you know, coming back to these ideas or these mantras of don't be distracted, like pay attention, you know, pay attention to all of the good moments in work and family, because you won't get this back. Little things like that helped me to stay grounded and attuned to what's going on in the present.
Yeah, definitely. And it's always good to remember them things, because there are always times where work gets crazy or you are super stressed and you have to actually remember, okay, what is really important here? Like,
yes,
work feeds us, but where does our happiness come from? So I completely get that. Mm-hmm. When it comes to back to beauty professionals, the beauty professionals, and obviously you've helped scale these businesses in the US, what tips have you got for people scaling their beauty businesses? Because obviously you managed to do that really well. So how have you managed to do that with them?
Oh my gosh. So, you know, we've powered over $12 billion in business for our beauty professionals in the US. And while I'm not a beauty professional, I know what works, because I work with the data science team to see what has worked with, you know, many tens of thousands and actually hundreds of thousands of professionals over this time. And I can tell you there's a couple of things. So the first is price your services effectively. So do a lot of research of professionals in your area and be honest with yourself about where you rank in the skill set, right? We're going to have different prices at the beginning of our career than the middle, than the end. And so you want clients to feel like they're getting a really good value for what they're paying you, but also you want to be at the high end of that really good value. So doing that research and pricing your services accordingly is really important. This, and think about prices and packaging and incentives to get your clients to upsell and to book with you multiple times. There's a lot of best practices on there. And you can go to the Style Seat blog. We have a ton of this content on there so you can read and learn more about this. I think the second thing is have really great photos of your work. There's a lot of beauty professionals that I talk to that feel overwhelmed, where they say, look, I go into the shop, into the salon spa, I focus on doing great work, I go home, I don't want to also be a photographer or like a social media person. And I completely understand it. But what I'd also say is it's your job. It's your job to do that. And this is what's going to make you money and grow, and how you're going to attract your next 10 years of your client base. So don't, I talk to, I, the, you know, there are folks that come to me that are like, okay, but I have to save up for the really fancy camera to then get the backdrop to then, I'll get an assistant that will help me edit. And it's like, no, grab your phone, just take a photo of your clients, get their permission, take a photo after every single appointment, do befores, do afters, get their permission to post it on Instagram, get an online booking platform, post it on that platform. Don't over filter it. Like, you can tweak and tune a little bit to, you know, something, but people want to see the real experience that they're going to get when they come into your salon. Don't filter your color photos of your hair. Like, show that unfiltered so that people know exactly what your balayage looks like or those services. Capture reviews and ratings. This is so incredibly important. When people are searching for these services, whether they're searching for them on StyleSeat or on another solution, let's say Google in the beginning, the more reviews and ratings that you have, and having a digital booking solution that ties to Google to highlight those reviews and ratings and search are going to be incredibly important. Google puts a lot of value on that. So that is how you can show up higher when people are searching for you. Definitely use Instagram and use those hashtags, use city and location hashtags in addition to service hashtags. Tag your photos on Instagram and tag your clients if they're open to that, so that they are likely to repost it in their stories, because that's going to go from being projected to your community to now being projected to your clients' communities. And that's really how you spread online word of mouth really effectively. So I'd say always get their Instagram handles. Hey, can I tag you? Is that okay? Like, would love if you would repost, no pressure, but like, you look fantastic. Let them feel good about it. Like, clients love to promote their pro. And sometimes we feel scared to ask, or we feel like it's salesy, but they want to promote you and you want to be promoted. So make it easy, like do all the work for them and just say, hey, no pressure, but it'd be wonderful, and hopefully you're okay with me posting. Surge pricing is huge. So we are the first, and I believe only, to do surge pricing for beauty and wellness services. I think that's a huge way to be able to make more money. And then I'd say definitely deploy marketing or use marketing tools. So start with your existing clients. Make sure you have a really good CRM solution to remind clients when it's time to book with you again, to let them know when you have a last minute opening. Start with your existing client base, get them to recommend you to their friends, maybe give them an incentive when they do that so that they're, they really want to spread that word of mouth. And there's a lot of online marketing that you can do as well to attract new customers. So there's so many, it can feel a little bit overwhelming. There's so many ways that you can grow your revenue. And again, there's tons of articles about this on our blog. You can go and if you're interested in any of these topics that I've mentioned, we have articles on everything. And there's a lot of great education out there, but that's where I would start.
When you mentioned about prices, the prices in the US compared to the UK are like so different. We undercharge massively here compared to the US. Like it's a
Well,
real thing.
there's a few reasons for that. So one is, the last number that I heard is that 65% of beauty professionals in the UK are independent. We call them booth renters in the US. That's up from 10%, a number a handful of years ago, like 5 years ago. So it's increasing. In the US, it's over 80% of beauty professionals are independent. And the way it used to work in the US is you would graduate beauty school, you'd go get a job at a salon, spa, barber shop, and that shop would take 70% of all of your revenue. And so you'd go, you show up, you cut hair, you go home, but you're not really worried about the price. Like the shop's kind of managing it, right? And what's happened now is the vast majority of professionals are independent. And so they're not giving up 70% of the revenue, they're keeping it. And so on the one hand, the revenue upside is significantly better. On the other hand, instead of showing up and cutting hair and going home, now you have to think about client acquisition, retention, pricing, payments processing, marketing, CRM. Like there's online booking, there's like all this stuff you got to worry about. But an extra $5 per appointment is like hugely impactful for you, again, because you're not paying that commission to the salon. And so I think there's a lot more of a emphasis and a like fine-tuning of pricing in the US, potentially because of that model. Like that's a bit more established here versus in the UK. But I think that this is going to change. And I think that we're going to see more and more in the UK of what we've been seeing in the US. That's my
Yeah,
prediction.
I think there's definitely going to be more of that as well. And I think everyone's starting to see now, okay, UK prices are really low, and a lot of the bigger people within the industry are like shouting about it now. So it's just giving people confidence of, you need to charge more than that. This is not a hobby. This is a job. Like, this is a business. You need to charge the right prices.
Well, that topic and a related topic, which is when can I break up with a client? When should I break up with a client? Are the two most read blog posts on StyleC. How do I price my services and how do I break up with a client? Because I think partly, I'll just speak for the US because that's the market that I know more. There's blurry lines in the US in this industry between like business professionalism and like social nature of it, right? People feel like their stylist is their best friend. And so maybe like if they don't show up, they're like, hey girl, so sorry. Sorry, I'm getting a phone call. So sorry, it's okay, right? And like there's a hesitancy to charge a cancellation fee because you love the person, you don't want to make them mad, or like there's a what was commonplace for the past couple of decades is that stylists would like charge a lower fee for clients who had been with them for a while than for new clients that come. And that's such an interesting dynamic because, does Neiman Marcus charge you 3 years ago prices because you've been shopping there, right? Or Harrods, or like think about the UK equivalent. Like, no, they're charging you today's prices. So why is that okay in this industry, but it's not in any other industry? And I think the professionalism and raising expectations in the industry for the behavior of clients and to let them know that, like, this is my career, this is my time is valuable. This is one of the beautiful things about surge pricing that we've launched is we have an algorithm that delivers different surge pricing to every business gets a different surge pricing algorithm. And that's because our technology looks at all of the factors of your business, and then the robots say, this is what you can earn. This is the market says you can earn. And what's wonderful about that is if a client says, like, hey, I don't like that it's 25% more Saturday morning, then you say, okay, you're welcome to book Wednesday. And then it's a lot cheaper, right? If you want to optimize for convenience, you book Saturday morning. If you want to optimize for price, you book on Wednesday. Everyone's happy, right? And that concept has helped to teach clients in the US, oh, this is just like surge pricing on Uber or surge pricing for Ticketmaster or, in all these other categories, hotels when there's an event. Like, it's trained them to understand that professionals, even though they're wonderful and they're our friends and friendly, this is an industry and this is a business just like other things. And I am optimistic that the industry will move more in that direction.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, I'm trying to shout about it as much as possible in the UK, so hopefully it'll start to make a change soon. Are you guys gonna try and come over to the UK and bring Starseat over here?
Yes, we are. I don't know if technically you can sign up there or not. It's probably a good thing for me to go figure out. I have been there a number of times actually over the past couple of months because my husband is the front of shirt sponsor for the Chelsea Football Club. So we've been going to a bunch of Chelsea games and like that's been really fun. I was not a football fan. It's just not as popular in the US. And didn't really understand it and like I'll watch the World Cup, but I don't know. I haven't, Americans like don't get it as a sport. But going in London, to Stamford Bridge and like sitting and seeing like being part of the crowd, and it was like a completely mind-blowing experience. I was like, oh, I would do this every week. This is the greatest thing ever. So that was really fun. So I love the UK. I would love to spend more time there, and hopefully we plan on launching there soon. I just don't know exactly when.
That's exciting, but we'll look forward to that. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. Thank you so much for sharing all your expertise and letting us know more about you. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you. It was wonderful to speak with you and really appreciate you having me on. And I really love your podcast. I have been listening to it and will continue to. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. We will add all of your things at the bottom so people can go and click on your links and go and check out Stylesy and yourself. And so, yeah, if you guys love this episode, then please go and share it and tag us so we can spread it to as many people as possible. Thank you so much.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Are you a trainer with a salon or an academy and would love to grow with government funding, but just need some help and support? Or maybe you're somebody that would like to start your own academy or even just train. Get in touch today with TMB to help you on this journey. See our link in the show notes.